Hello and welcome to Alex's Conversation. I'm Bobby Cho and I'll be your host for today. We're very lucky to have with us Nicole and Ayasha, our 2020 Alex's Fellow. Their fellowship was interrupted by the pandemic, but we're able to honor our commitment to Nicole and Ayasha and continue the support and hopefully that continue their support to return to Haystack in the summer of 2022. So with so much have changed, we want to use this conversation as a chance to catch up with them and see what they have been up to and how they're doing during this time before they return to their fellowship. So I'll hand this over to Nicole and Ayasha and have them introduce themselves a little bit more. So here they are.
Thank you. I guess we should start by introducing ourselves. Nayasha, would you like to begin?
Sure. Thank you, Bobby. So yeah, I'm Nayasha Madamombe, and I'm from Zimbabwe. I also did my BFA back home in Zimbabwe, and then I came over to the US to do my MFA, which I did at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville. So I'm a visual artist. I'm pretty new to clay, actually, and to ceramics, but yeah, I'm a visual artist and I work in a lot of different medium, but a lot of clay as well. Nicole?
So I'm Nicole McLaughlin. I got my BFA from Kansas City Art Institute, and I am mostly a ceramic artist, but I also work a little bit with fiber, and I've started to implement fiber processes as a larger part of my process, and sort of got started with clay in high school. I guess we could talk a little bit about that. How did you get your start in clay, or what drove you to the material in the first place?
In a funny way, I guess it was stone carving, which is a completely different material to clay. That kind of drove me to start clay, which I started working with clay in grad school. I guess I wanted to find a different material to stone that could, because I didn't have access to like the kind of stone that I wanted to work with here in the US. So I wanted to find a material that I felt like would be able to do what I needed to do that I was doing with stone, which ended up being clay, although it's not something I'm carving. It's a more, you know, additive, very different material. But so I got a scholarship to go to Aramont for a week workshop, and I was there for 5 days, and it was just amazing. And I got to make my first clay piece, which when I tell a lot of people that this is the first thing in clay I've ever made, they're like, no way. So yeah, I've been making clay since, I guess, about 2 years ago. But yeah, that's how I got started with clay. And it was just from there, I was just like, I love this. I love clay. I've just got to keep working in it. And so I've incorporated it into the rest of everything else that I do. That's How did amazing. You get started?
I got started in high school. I went to a boarding school in Massachusetts called Tabor Academy, and that's actually where I am right now. I'm a teaching fellow here, and I have been. This is my second year. But I just got into making pots, and I didn't really know about ceramics, and I just sort of fell in love with it. You know, the studio sort of became a safe haven, and I was starting to think about, you know, things like history and culture within ceramics with the program that we teach here. And it just got me thinking, like, this is something that I want to pursue. So that led me to the Kansas City Art Institute. And, you know, I sort of grew up making pots. And although my work leans more towards the sculptural realm now, the vessel is definitely still a really important part to my work. And I sort of attribute it to how I got my start, which was with pottery. So that's sort of my story.
Yeah, that's actually funny because I grew up around traditional Shona pots. Like I'm Shona with the tribe that I'm from, and I grew up around those pots, and they were, to me, it wasn't just art, I guess, because it was functional, but it was really made in very beautiful artistic ways, and there's like a lot of history and culture that's within, and like a lot of storytelling that's actually within those pots that's put on them. And I think I just grew up with it, but yeah, it's interesting that I gravitated towards stone carving before I came around and went to
back to clay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's funny to think about the little pieces in your childhood or like your growth period that become so influential to you.
Yeah.
And to me too. I had a similar experience where, you know, I was spending a lot of my time in Mexico with my mom's family and in her hometown and, you know, constantly eating off of handmade objects and highly decorative artisan objects. And, you know, that's yeah. where I draw the most inspiration from now in my work. And it's like, when I was doing that as a little kid, I didn't think that that was an important piece. And suddenly now it's like, that's at the forefront of what I'm doing. And it seems like maybe some of the storytelling for you is also at the forefront.
Yeah. I think it's because it was so normal. It's like we grew up around it. It's just a part of us. So I think, you know, just not knowing later on when I guess coming to a different country, like for me, I don't know for you, but for me, it like really made me much more aware of my history and my traditions, and yeah. actually like made me want to be closer
mm-hmm.
to it. Yeah, and I think, yeah.
Go ahead.
And that's how
ahead.
I got to appreciating it even more and like seeking it out even more.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that when you feel like you're losing touch with something that you're so passionate about or feel so connected to or did feel so connected to at one point, you then begin to search for ways to keep that connection and build that connection. And, you know, I sort of have a different background and a relationship with the Mexican culture because I was born in the U.S. My father is from the U.S.
I see.
You know, so for me, I was sort of experiencing Mexico and the Mexican culture when I was there, but also when I was geographically removed because my grandparents from Mexico were living with us. So inside the home, you know, we were speaking Spanish, eating traditional food, we're being raised with Mexican values. But mm-hmm. then when I was outside in school and things like that, it was like two different worlds. So
right.
it was kind of complex. And it was like, the older I got, the more I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll just like put that to the side. Like that became less and less about my identity. And then when mm-hmm. I started making work, I was sort of feeling like, who am I? And like, I've lost so much touch with it. And so through my work, I started answering some of those personal questions of
right.
like, what do I value? And what do I value about my identity that the people before me have given me? And that's sort of like the spiral that now is like, searching for that connection that you talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess for me, it's a little bit different. Like I was born and raised in Zimbabwe and I was already questioning a lot of things in relation to like culture and identity because of colonialism, you know, and thinking about, well, who are we? Where did, you know, what are the things that we've been made to, the things that we've forgotten and the things that we need to remember. And I was already questioning those things and thinking about those things before I got here. And I think coming here, it became even more like,
apparent.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And just, I need to know even more. And I, you know, it's like when you're in a place where I knew a lot about, like when I came here, a lot of people asked me, oh, the culture shock must have been something else. And I'm like, I know a lot about America. I know a lot about the world, actually. It you know, and it's like there's very distinct and specific certain things that are like specific to the South or specific to New York or something, but like the culture shock wasn't in the way that people expect. And I think so, you know, coming here and realizing that people here don't know that much about where I'm from was kind of like, okay, I need to talk about this even more. You know.
Yeah, I think that's like a really good lead into this question that we have about like the duality within both our work, right? Because we mm-hmm. both, although our work is super different, I think we have a lot of themes that sort of connect us, especially because it's so rooted in history and culture and tradition.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about like how you feel about the duality and sort of like making work from like two different places? One being like you and your experience and your identity and that self-reflection. And then also on the other side that is more deeply rooted in history and culture, and maybe like back home versus like America.
Right. I think, I guess, like I was saying before, I had really started to think a lot about, you know, identity and culture because of colonialism and that interruption that we experienced. And I was thinking a lot about that and what that meant to me and who I am as an African, as a Zimbabwean. And so when I came here, I think in the beginning, I struggled a little bit, like finding my footing and really being comfortable and confident in where I'm from and the things that I want to talk about. I think because I thought for a moment I had to like find a way to make sure my work was understood. And I think I eventually thought, you know what, it's okay if people don't get it. And I think I also realized that I'm actually not just making the work, even though I'm not in Zimbabwe anymore, I am making the work for people at home. I'm making it for myself, I'm making it for people at home, and I'm making it for people that don't know about my culture or where I'm from. But also there's, I think in probably in both our works at some point, it's really about the human connection. And that's something that's global. And so I realized that there's still a way for people to, you know, connect with my work and for us to have certain conversations through my work. And it was just kind of like, I'm okay with just getting into the studio and making the work that I want to make. But, you know, I guess partly because I'm from, you know, that whole duality thing and kind of turning into a hybrid-ish artist. I think I'm always making work that's, because I'm talking about, you know, the ancient world in my work, it's spiritual world, while trying to bring it into the physical world. And I'm making work that's like work that's digital, which I sort of look at as the spiritual world, and I'm making work that's physical. And you know, like I'm going back and forth with that, ancient and new, and back and forth with that. So I feel like I'm always constantly in that frame of mind, whether I would have been here or not. But yeah, you know, I how does that work for you? Like, especially you said you grew up like back and forth between here and Mexico.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting because for me, it's like the question of like, where do I belong? Because for me, like, I'm half Mexican, my mom's from Mexico, and I spent really like the beginning of my childhood in Mexico with her. And then my sort of like older years. And now obviously I've lived here for a long time. And, you know, I've gone to like my boarding school is predominantly white. And then, you know, Kansas City was more diverse. And like, I had a really good friend group where, you know, like I started to cultivate that culture again. But it's always been a question of like, who am I? Am I both? Am I neither? Am I either or, dependent on where I am? So it's sort of like my work, like sort of tries to answer that question for myself. So it sort of become like when I'm in the studio, I'm thinking about all of these aspects of myself and my influence. And ultimately, like, I don't know, and that's something that I'm okay with. And it's like, I am what I am, and my experience is my experience. And, you know, yeah. So, I mean, I'm Mexican-American, I'm American-Mexican. I mean, two sides of the coin, right? So, like, when I'm making the work, I'm pulling from history and tradition and traditional materials. So, thinking about ceramic traditions and craft traditions and fiber traditions, and then pulling those more into like a contemporary space. And, you know, I'm not really interested in using those things to replicate them. I'm more interested in using sort of them as a way to manipulate the tradition and show a shift of my experience, sort of like how the things that my grandmother and mom have taught me and sort of like the traditions that they've passed on and how those sort of change and go through me through every generation that comes. So, yeah, I think it's interesting, right? For you, it's like you're making the work that you're making. And for me, it's like I am making the work that I'm making because I'm trying to search for an answer. And I don't know, maybe you're trying to search for an answer as well. But yeah, I think at the end of the day, like we're making the work because we believe in what we're trying to say and communicate.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I definitely also am trying to answer something, like, you know, within my work in relation to identity as well, you know, definitely yeah. questions of who am I in this world generally. And like, there's this, you know, perception about Africa and who, what, you know, Africans are this or whatever. And just like, a lot of that is like, one of the artists that I really, whose work I look at is Yinka Shonibare, the British Nigerian artist. And he really makes me think twice about what I've always believed to be African identity and what I thought, you know, this, yeah, this is who I am. This is what we've always done. And this is who we've always been. And then realizing that a lot of that has very complicated history and there's a lot to like dig in and find. And then, so from those kinds of, you know, that kind of research, I'm like, okay, so who am I?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we start and like a material like ceramics is so rooted in history and culture, right? So when we start doing research into like materials, for me at mm-hmm. least, like the material that I or the technique that I use is maiolica and terracotta, and you know, I think about how maiolica came to Mexico, and then I start doing research on the difference between 17th and 18th century Televera patterns versus 19th, 20th century, and then I start to understand that, like, okay, well, like these were then shifted and they're really Spanish, and then we start getting into this idea of like colonization of like the indigenous people and the Spanish people, so it's yep. like, again, like, who are we in relation to like the materials and processes and ideas that we're trying to communicate? And I think that it's always going to be that. And I think that, you know, I think that's what makes the work great. And it continues to make us create work, because mm-hmm. it's never, I don't think that we're ever going to reach a point where we say, oh yeah, that's it. That's the answer.
At least yeah. Yeah. No, I totally agree. And there's a lot, you know, like a lot of like my history has been passed down orally. There hasn't been a lot of, and it's not like I was saying in traditional pots and things like that and fabrics and the way that a mother would teach her daughter a certain technique, like, you know, knitting or whatever, very traditional stuff. I think a lot of that has been passed down that way. And then it's like, some of it gets lost. Because like the younger generations, maybe we're not so much into that as our parents and grandparents were. And I feel like there's so much, the more I do research, I'm like blown away every single time. I'm like, oh my God, I had no idea this is where we come from. And these are the things that we used to do. And this is what this thing means that I grew up with, but never really considered, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, for sure. There's like, definitely a lot of that searching. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that with our work, we both search to create and create a connection with this idea of like femininity or like the feminine legacy. And mm-hmm. I like the point that you made about how mothers teach their daughters, you know, different knitting techniques and things like that. And that's something I use a lot of embroidery in my work. And that's a lot of what I look at as well. And there's a specific technique that's called the Nungo, and it's a way that's been stitched. And, you know, that is passed on from mother to child. And, you know, it was a technique that was developed after, a drought, so the farming community wasn't creating crops, and so all of a sudden now this region in Mexico, that is their largest way to create income out of,
you know, right,
survive. And you know, the women have taken it on, but now there's such a need and such a market for it that the men are starting to take it on, you know, and now it's kind of creating like a modern aesthetic. And so
right.
like, in real time we're seeing how history changes.
Yeah I guess, you know, necessity and all that. But yeah, I mean, speaking of like femininity and the feminine legacy and stuff, I mean, my work is definitely, you know, trying to keep the legacy and traditions of the women before me and all the things that I've been, I definitely would not be who I am and where I am without all those women in my life. Like, in Shona, there's a very common and profound saying, which is Mushamukazi, which means like the woman is home, but home isn't referring to the house. It's referring to also home of the spirit, right? Like we take care of everything. We take care of the physical, we take care of the spirit, because it, you know, like the women in my life have been the most kindest and toughest women who have basically paved the way and shown me the way for me to be who I am. And so like, even some of the male artists, like the artists that I learned how to, I know I keep going back to carving stone, but yeah, the way that they depicted women and the way that they just want to tell women's stories is not in, like some of the paintings that I see, like Western paintings where women are kind of like an object and they're not really there, you know, in the way that traditional stone carvers depict women is just like they are the center of everything. And it's because of that saying and knowing that, you know, women are home. And I think for me, I'm always kind of through my work looking for that, or trying to surround myself with that home, because in doing my research and in making the work, I'm constantly thinking about these women and these stories and surrounding myself with their energy and just, you know, wanting to celebrate that in my work and keeping myself, you know, with home wherever I am. That's kind of like how I really, I guess, you know, talk about and tackle that whole thing to do with femininity and the feminine legacy. And I think of late, I've realized that, like now because I'm from a really big family. I have 5 brothers and 4 sisters, older than the youngest. And so they have, you know, I have a lot of nieces and nephews, but just actually realizing that my nieces are now looking up to me and like I have something to give them, to leave for them. And I have something to say that is important and that I hope that, you know, they take something from that and they're able to find who they are from that. So it's very important to me, you know, to make sure that I continue to bring forth women and give us, you know, the space and for them to just know they can be like really grand women, but also like everyday women who are creating this really, I guess, grand legacy collectively. But yeah.
I mean, I feel very connected to that too. And, you know, this idea of like paying tribute to the women who can't come before you and have taught you, paved the way for you and passed on all of these things that they viewed as important for you to have, you know, and creating. And I think that's where like the need to continue creating connections with culture and history and femininity comes from. And then it comes to a point, like you said, your nieces are going to start or are looking up to you and you suddenly realize like, I need to do something and I need to give something in this world where like those who come after me can then take forth into the future. And again, continue this pattern of like raising women up to know that who came before them, they are capable of the same and more, you know, and I think a lot about my grandmother and my mom and, you know, they worked really hard for me to, you know, learn Spanish. Spanish is my first language and, you know, made an effort for me to go to Mexico and, you know, just be completely immersed and have sort of like a traditional upbringing. And, you know, there kind of came a point where my grandmother moved back to Mexico and I don't see her very often. And, you know, that sort of led me to this idea of like, well, you know, she is the one that always cooks and, you know, we rely on her when we go and see her. And no one knows her recipes. And we all ask her, like, can you cook this for me? And can you cook that for me? But no one knows her recipes. So in my senior year in undergraduate, I, you know, I started becoming scared. Like if she, like when she's gone, like I'm going to lose that piece of her. And that is our family history and our, and her legacy. And no one was working to preserve that. And I knew that was always something that she wanted to share with me, like the opportunity to cook in the kitchen with her and, you know, recipes and things like that, which I think food is such an important part to community and family, and especially womanhood. I mean, if we look at sort of like the traditional woman's role, which I mean, in Mexico, you know, that's a huge dynamic in the culture. So I created this cookbook that had sort of like all the meals that she cooked when I was younger. And it was a really odd experience because, you know, she's in Mexico and I was calling her and she was writing by hand the recipe and then sending a picture and it was being emailed and then I was cooking and calling her. So it was just sort of this experience that I always wanted to have with her, but it was happening sort of electronically. But then I was able to do the cookbook with her. And, you know, I think sort of the fear in losing that made me do it because I was in that mental space. And, you know, even though it's not the experience that I necessarily wanted, I now have that to pass on to the next generation. And I think that she felt, I think we became closer because of that, because she realized like, okay, like this is important and we should work together to, you know, pass this down.
I guess in that way, you know, technology, even though you couldn't be together because you're somewhere else, it helped in that way. And just, it's that creating that hybrid self and hybrid culture and just using what you have to make it work.
I sort of like that comment that you made earlier in our discussion about your digital work being sort of spiritual. And I feel like that sort of ties into like what I just talked about. Is there a specific reason that you feel that your digital work, you view it as sort of like the spiritual world or the spiritual like feeling?
I think because, you know, the spiritual world is something that we maybe feel, but, and sometimes see, but cannot touch, or, you know, we're kind of living in the same space with it, but on different realms, maybe, if I can say that, or different planes. And I feel like the digital world is kind of like that. It's kind of like,
intangible.
Yeah, exactly. But, even in the process of making it, it's like when I've spent hours like working on a digital piece versus like I've spent time going into the studio and people see me going into the studio and out and they see something, I'm making something over the next couple of days and it's, you know, hours and I'm making this thing and they see it versus the digital world where I'm it's just me and I'm working for hours and then I come and I say, I've done this thing. It seems very, people don't view it the same way. Like they don't view the labor of the digital work versus the physical ceramic piece in the same way. It's there, but it's just very different and it feels like a whole different world. And I feel like this, you know, the spiritual world is kind of like that. Especially when I animate the digital pieces, it's almost like, you know, like having a photograph of someone who's passed, uploading it and then animating it. It's just this other layer of another world that's different from this physical world that we exist in. And I feel like that, you know, in the digital world, I'm able to do certain things and bring the work to life in different ways than I, which I think really relates to, I guess, how I connect with the spiritual world. Yeah,
that's so.
But yeah, that's kind of how I look at that. So, you know, which is,
No, I mean, I think it's interesting because like I've seen a lot of your sculptures and, you know, they're just like larger than life, right? And like, and then I see some of your digital work online and, you know, in a way they feel larger than life. Then like when we ingest or we see them, they're like this big on the phone screen, right? But they also, there's like such an element of like intimacy, like when it's just you. And I feel like, and with the image, and I don't know if you view it this way, but I think that spirituality is very personal. And so like
having,
especially for like the digital stuff to like, right. I mean, you could look at it on a computer or a projector or whatever, but most people are going to be looking at it on a phone screen, right? So it's like one-on-one experience.
And it's in the same way in that I was making it, you know, it's me and the tablet or the computer. And it's this very intimate, like, experience. And I feel like it's the same for people. And unlike, you know, sculptural work, that, or, you know, that needs to be viewed in the round, or the experience of seeing it in, on screen versus in person is very different. The digital work is meant to be seen in the way that, and, you know, it's able to travel all over in the way that it's supposed to be seen, you know? So yeah, it's a,
yeah. I'm curious, sort of jumping now to something completely different.
Sure.
How was it for you making work during COVID? Because Bobby sort of in our intro said that our fellowship was interrupted by COVID.
Right.
So I'm curious,
yeah.
You know, like, what was your experience as being a studio artist, and like maybe what were the biggest challenges, or maybe even the positives in that experience?
I suppose, I mean, in the beginning, I guess like everybody else, it was like, whoa, how do I, and I was still in grad school, and I was about to go into my thesis year when COVID hit. And it was like, I can't be in the studio. I can't, I had all these amazing ideas that I thought I'm going to make this way, work this way. I'm going to have performative aspects in my work and collaborate with these people and do all these things. And I ended up having to scrap a lot of that and just completely just shut down and restart and like try to figure that out. And I started to do a lot of research and a lot of reading. And so that was like very helpful. I think that was a really positive part about that, is that I was able to do a lot of that research and started to think about ways that, because I was already in communication with my family through digital means, phone and stuff, because I couldn't be with them in person anyway. And so I actually did a lot of, you know, talking about like documenting history with your grandmother. I started to do a lot of recordings with my mom and my sisters and my my nieces. And there's like in Shona, we do a lot of, depending on what tribe you're from or what totem you are, there's like different kind of like poems that speak on our history and things like that. And I started to do a lot of research into that and like recording with my mom and my sisters and my nieces, and a lot of other like female people in my life, women in my life. But yeah, I had a very interesting incident over that period. Like I had just moved into, because I'd started to do a lot of ceramics, I moved into a ceramic studio that had space for me to work and kilns and stuff. And like one day I just walked into my studio and there was this guy like sitting there. At first I thought, oh, he's probably maintenance or something. Mm-hmm. And then I like looked around and realized there was like a bunch of like broken ceramics on the floor. And I realized, I think something is not okay here. And I like, he had his back to me. So I quickly backed out and like went outside and called the cops and called my mentor. Turns out this guy over the weekend broke into the studios, walked past everyone else's studio. Not that I would want anybody else's work to have been damaged.
Of course.
Went straight to my studio and just went at my work, like threw my work on the ground. Like some of it was unrecognizable. Like he smashed it completely. And it was just, it happened to have been cold. Someone must have left the door open or something, and he walked in, found one place. And I'm like, my work must, I don't know what it was, but like I had to restart my work. So like you see in the images that I posted, there's like pieces of, there's like this work that's broken.
Like rubble almost.
Yeah, that was one of the only pieces that survived. And so I had to like rethink, this is like the semester is over and I'm left with one more semester, which, you know, when it's thesis, the final semester is more like, it's more like just perfecting stuff and you have to have made work. And I was in a panic. So like, you know, COVID is happening. I'm teaching, I'm trying to figure this out. My work has been destroyed. I'm like, the whole experience was just bizarre. Like when the cops came over, the first thing they asked me was like, are you making work that's offensive? And I was like, you know, unless this person is offended by powerful Black women, I really don't know. I don't know how to answer that question.
And did you ever find out if it was motivated?
It was just, honestly, it was just a random act of violence, like a person who was on drugs and they found a place to just hide out from the cold, and maybe they were high and my work looked so realistic, it started talking to them. Like maybe the spiritual world and the physical world came together. And
I mean, it was just insane. Because I looked at some of your images of the broken pieces. Did any mm-hmm. of that end up taking you in a place that you wouldn't have just if that hadn't happened? Like, were you able to use that in a certain way?
For sure. Yeah. Like the broken piece just started to have me think about, because, you know, I was already thinking about these things, about colonialism and interruption of trajectory and, you know, who I am and where I was going. And I started to think, okay, what can I, and it was my mom and my sisters who got me back into, because I was just on the phone crying with my mom. And my mom was like, first of all, I'm just happy that it's not you that this person found. I wasn't in the space when this happened. And then, like, she's like, look, you still have all this. I still had the top part of it without the head, and I found like eyes in there and parts of the mouth in there. And my mom said, pick up those pieces, don't throw them away, and they will take you somewhere else. And I picked them up and I put them together and I looked at them, and they suddenly just felt like this ancient relic that mm-hmm. I had discovered. Like when I was picking them up, it felt like maybe I was doing some kind of archaeology and I was finding these pieces and putting them back together. And it really kind of felt like, I don't know, I was almost connecting with some kind of ancestral spiritual realm in that moment. And from there, like the work that I made and then the recordings that I had earlier made just kind of really brought everything together for me. So it definitely changed, or maybe more, I would say, cemented or helped me really clarify the direction in which I was going with my work at the time. But yeah.
It's crazy that an event like that that's so awful creates such a wonderful opportunity too. And, you know, as a maker and a creator, for you to be able to go in and pick up those pieces and, you know, like lean and turn towards your mom and the women in your life to say, like, what do I do now? Mm-hmm. And then for them to sort of like lead you down this path of
a right.
spiritual connection, it just sort of like conceptually feels like, you know, maybe in some weird way, like the pandemic was supposed to happen and like this guy breaking in your studio was supposed to like give you this opportunity and, you know, shift your work in a way that maybe you wouldn't have like discovered in any other
way. Yeah, because I just hit the ground running with that and I just was more, you know, eager to really bring that out more and talk more. So at the end of my entire show was about, you know, the women before me, as ancient as far back as I could go, and like and then like the present women and obviously my nieces, the future, you know, but just it was all about women and just really just being, you know, and just celebrating that from something so violent. Because I know, like, you know, all of them also went through, it got me thinking about what all the things that they went through and the interruptions that they had, mm-hmm. and yet they still kept going.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How did you tackle COVID in isolation and working?
Well, you know, I was still at the Kansas City Art Institute, and we were just about like a few weeks away from delivering our BFA work, and you know, suddenly the studios shut down and we were all sent home, and you know, there was like this panic of all of us like taking whatever we could mm-hmm. out on the studio into our tiny apartments, you know. And luckily I had like a bunch of just random vessels bisqued, and so I just sort of like threw everything in my car, and I had sort of like a studio storage trunk. go walk to my car in the morning and like pull something out and then just like glaze and things like that. And so I was working on a fairly large installation at the time, and I did end up finding a way to finish it, but it sort of forced me to go back to the small things and think about, you know, do research on, you know, glaze techniques and patterns and things like that, and really develop that. And so at the end, I sort of had a beautiful collection of like highly decorative objects that was not really where I was going at all. I was for the first time working with indigo and fiber in a large scale, and, you know, these hanging vessels that were supposed to get installed and finished. And so I was working sort of like on a 10-foot scale, and then pandemic hit and I was working like in this scale. So, you know, it was probably the best thing for me at the time with, you know, I think we all felt sort of like a sense of like, what am I even doing? Like, what is, and I just remember like being in isolation and constantly like there was a period of like questioning, like, what am I doing? Why am I making what I'm making?
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter. Like in the grand scheme of things, like this whole, like with what's happening in the world. So
exactly. I know.
Focusing in on that. And then when that passed, allowing myself to take what I learned in isolation and working sort of on a more intimate scale and expanding, I think was so beneficial to me in a weird way. Like I did find a way to finish those larger pieces and they got installed. But I immediately moved away from Kansas City after that. I left that work there. And in August, a friend of mine installed those for the BFA exhibition. So I never saw them in person hung up. So I never got to experience them in the round and walking around these 10-foot, you know, hanging things. Right. So
that's crazy.
It's sort of weird. Like my biggest work I've never experienced in real life, which is sort of like, you know, it's sad in some ways, but it's also sort of like incredible that this thing exists and, you know, is so powerful. And it was about like, sort of like, I don't know. It was one of those works where, you know, it had so many elements of like material and the process. And it was the first time I was using indigo, and I was doing a lot of research into indigo and, you know, its meaning in the Mayan culture and the pigment Maya blue and, you know, and its power in an agricultural community. And so it had like all of these things, but for me, it was the first time where the personal felt like lacking. Like I was trying to find an entry point into this work that I was making. Like, it's special and it's spiritual, and I'm trying to like tie things to, you know, different cultures. But again, it was the question of like, where do I fit into this? Which I mean, is where I kind of make work from. But so Kansas City, I was out of Kansas City, and then I moved back to Massachusetts, where I'm originally from. And almost immediately I was on Zoom, you know, planning for the upcoming school year. How are we going to teach online ceramics? And as anyone in the ceramics world knows, teaching ceramics online is very difficult. A summer full of just Zoom calls and trying to think what would be beneficial to students. And we were able to get in the studio for some time. Sometime we were digital. And that was my first teaching experience. So, so it was really interesting, like trying to balance the two and make work. And at the time, you know, I was like getting a lot of attention on my work, which was weird for times at COVID. So I was like making all of these things in the studio at the school here. And I was putting them up on the wall, photographing them. They were going out into the world. And after school, especially how school ended with COVID, it just was sort of like, I felt like I was on a treadmill. Like I'm just making work. I'm sending it out. It's going in the world. And I don't see it. Like I'm not seeing it in these galleries and I'm not seeing it. So it was sort of like, I was feeling disconnected from the work a little bit in like a really weird way.
Yeah.
And then now in my second year here, you know, we're back in the studio, things are a little bit more normal. And I'm getting back to that point where COVID hit, where I'm working on the smaller scale and like trying to zero back in. So it's sort of come full circle for me.
Yeah.
It's just sort of interesting, you know.
And I guess the COVID experience made it much more comfortable for you to go back to the smaller stuff and work with it, because you've already been there. You were kind of forced into that situation, but it became, you became comfortable with it?
Yeah, and I think it serves as a good reminder, like, especially when we make larger work or, you know, work that requires a lot of time and attention, installation and perfection and all of those things mm-hmm. that, you know, trying to put on like a large scale installation or whatever it may be, it's important to sort of like go back to the root of things and sort of explore new ideas and then how those expand outward. And so now I've tried to sort of like implement that experience in my studio work. Like, okay, if I'm feeling stuck, then I need to go back and sort of like play. So I guess leaving room in the studio for playing and drawing and experience.
Yeah. I think that's another thing that COVID did for me was made me, because, you know, my foundation is in drawing. I've been drawing since forever. That's where I started before, you know, and I used to watch the stone carvers in my neighborhood from a distance and just wonder, like, how do they do that? One day I want to do that. But like, I had been doing so much like of making sculptural stuff and all different kinds of materials that, and the only drawing I did was digital, but I started to do a lot of drawing as well, going back to and just enjoying it because I used to enjoy it, you know? So that was something else for me to just go back to through COVID. But yeah, so you talked a little bit about moving back to Massachusetts after your BFA. Like, what else have you been getting up to since, I guess, since we...
Since our fellowship.
Since our fellowship. And
what, 2000? What year was that? I don't know, 2020? I moved back and I actually am teaching at my old boarding school. I'm a teaching fellow. So I teach high school, all grades, and I teach hand building and sculpture, and I teach wheel working. I'm also a dorm parent, so I live in a dorm. So my life looks like a little bit different than I originally thought it would. I'm working a lot in the studio too, and just trying to find what do I want to be doing. And I don't know what that is right now. I'm loving the teaching experience and I'm loving being in the studio with the kids and making work and, you know, selling on my site and sometimes sending to galleries and things like that. And just sort of like exploring every aspect of, you know, what being an artist can be. I don't know what's next for me or, you know, what the next year holds, but, you know, the work is, I've been lucky this year where I feel motivated and passionate to just continue making. I think after COVID, there was a little bit of time where a lot of people, myself included, maybe didn't feel that way. Yeah. And so I'm just trying to hold on to that, like just keep making and whatever's next will come next.
Yeah. I definitely feel that. Like, just, there was a lot of questioning of what is happening? What am I doing? What is the meaning of life?
Yeah. What have you been up to since 2020?
So I graduated.
Yeah.
And I moved to New York.
Yeah.
And I'm teaching at Parsons. So
that's right. What do you teach there?
I teach integrative studios. So it's a mixture of different things. Basically, I'm guiding the students in whatever different mediums that they want to work with. So I'm working with them in illustration, digital media, sculptural, like photography, everything. Yeah.
Any stone carving?
I wish. I actually had to leave. A lot of my stuff is still back in Knoxville. My materials, my stone and stuff, until, because New York spaces, I had no idea that space is like this precious. So studio wise, I'm not yet in a studio, so I've been doing a lot of digital artwork. But I did get a residency for printmaking, so I'm gonna try my hand at printmaking. Because I kind of started to do that with a mixture of digital and like with my ceramic stuff and fabric, kind of trying to bring a lot of like symbols and imagery from ancient symbols and imagery that I kind of incorporated into a more hybrid version. And so I'm going to be doing a lot of that with the printmaking residency that I got. And then just, you know, seeing where things take me. I can't wait to get back into a ceramics studio.
Yeah.
And just make some work. I really miss it.
Yeah. But that's so exciting. Printmaking. Is that like, how did that, you started doing it, but
yeah.
Is it a residency in New York?
Is it what?
Is it in New York?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's the Robert Blackburn printmaking workshop. So it's in Manhattan, and I'll be doing that for a year.
That's fantastic.
But I'll still also be teaching.
Right, right.
Yeah, and trying to find a studio so I can make ceramic work.
Yeah,
and somewhere to carve.
Yes, I'll be rooting for you to find that in New York. There's got to be a place.
Yeah, I think I just kind of like when I got here, I just kind of like was like, let me take a minute. And just like breathe and then take it in.
Yeah.
I just graduated. It was COVID. I just graduated and I've just moved to a new city. And now I've got a new job teaching. I just need to breathe and then like, you know, mm-hmm. get back into it. So I'm finding I've only been here for 3 months. So
yeah.
I'm finding my way in.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
how have you found balancing teaching and your creative process?
I was already doing that when I was,
right.
Yeah, my MFA, because I was teaching as well. Mm-hmm. So I was already doing that. So I guess my MFA just prepared me for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just not running to my mentor and going, what do I do here? I have to figure it out myself. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I was already doing it. So it's a little different because it's, you know, I'm not a grad student anymore. And,
yeah.
But I don't know. I kind of feel like teaching for me is in a way like collaboration with these young budding 18-year-old artists,
mm-hmm.
That are just, you know, I feel like it's kind of like mini collaborations that I have with them and somehow it feeds my own work.
Mm-hmm.
And then the stuff that I do with my own work feeds my teaching and hopefully is doing something for my students as well. So yeah, I don't know. I think it works well together. It's just a back and forth kind of thing. So
yeah, I think it's interesting that you talk about like your work feeding the teaching you do and the teaching you do feeding like your work and mm-hmm. sort of like this back and forth. And I didn't really, because teaching the last couple of years is my first experience. I mean, I TA'd a mm-hmm. little bit in undergrad, but nothing like now.
Yeah.
And that idea of like collaboration of like giving something to the student and then the student then making it their own, then gives you something back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I mean, I think it's what makes teaching so great. But it also is like one of those things that I have a lot of like times where I'm like, oh, well, that's not really how I would have done that. But then it makes me think like, oh, actually, that's a really great way to do it. And so it's like back and forth. And
yeah, you know,
much younger students, I teach like even like 14 to like 18. And so it's weird going from like a really like a from a college program, an undergraduate program, and you know what that's like, and
mm-hmm.
then coming to a program like this. And I just always tell my students, you know, like, I'm here because I want to offer you my experience and then what I have found valuable as a ceramic student, I'm going to try to give to you. And, you know, sometimes they're like, that's a little like over my head. That's not like, I don't understand. Like, I just did an architecture project with them and they were like, I don't know about this. And they sort of like come around to it and they're like, actually, you know, that was good. So I don't know. I think that teaching is, you know, plays an important part of like just making and creating in a communal studio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, that's something that I like coming here. Back home, I'm so used to always being surrounded by family and friends and like, here it's it's different. And so it's like really finding that community wherever you either stumble upon it or, you know, and so it's, you learn to appreciate it in very different ways, but yeah.
I think that's what makes ceramics so unique too. I mean, I haven't really worked with a ton of other mediums or been in other kinds of communal studios, but every ceramic studio that I have been or visited, it just seems like there's such a community where people are so willing to teach you and so willing to learn from you, and just like a curiosity, whether it be about concept or technique or just like, can I help you?
Oh, yeah.
Or can I?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just so, it's just like every place I go, I'm like, I feel so lucky to be working with ceramics because I know that the other, like one of my professor's husbands would call us clay people. Like clay people are you know, and I always
think it's sculpture people. Like, yeah, like people like who make objects. Make
their hands. Yes.
Yeah, because there's so much of like really helping each other out. You need to carry this 50 or 100 pound bag or whatever. And there's just so much of just like helping each other out.
Like, with, you know that someone's got your back.
Yeah. That's definitely how I got through, like when I was learning how to make ceramic work is the people around me, the other artists and you know, teachers and stuff. It was just like my professors and stuff. I knew that if I didn't know anything, I just had to ask someone and they would be there. And sometimes they would just notice things that, oh, I think actually if you do it this way and you look at it this way or think about it this way, I'm like, oh, that's why I was having a hard time. I'm supposed to do it this way. But yeah, for sure, like helping you load kilns and unmove stuff. And it's just, yeah, definitely a very community close type of situation.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, I think we've kind of gone through.
Yeah, I think we've covered a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a great conversation you guys made. That's amazing. Well, okay, so I'm going to wrap this up and then I'm just going to go ahead and say thank you so much for both of you. And on behalf of the ArtX's board, we're honored and excited to work with both of you again for, you know, this extended fellowship. I'm sure that you guys will do great. And I also just wanted to say that, you know, your point of view and identity, culture and tradition and your work are extremely thoughtful and inspirational. I think it's really, truly amazing to see both of you, you know, obviously at the beginning of the fellowship and till now. And then obviously, you know, we're going to have to do some more to get you guys to Haystack. But so thank you again. Thank you for, you know, being patient with us and, you know, obviously being our fellow. So where can people find out more about your work?
I have a website. It's nyashamadamombe.com. And then my Instagram is at nyashamada. So everything else connects back to each other from there. If you find me on one platform, you'll be able to find me on the other.
Yeah, same. My website is NicoleAMcLaughlin.com and my Instagram is NicoleAMcLaughlin as well. And if you find one, you'll find another.
All right. Well, once again, thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
That was a great conversation.
Thank you so much.